The world has shown itself to have an extraordinary tolerance for violence and carnage. It is tolerating the horrible situation in Syria. And the question gets asked, is there an event that changes the situation, that transforms the world, that transfixes its attention?
We did not know anything. We even did not think that could have happened. And if we would have known that could happen, we never let them in. And I was punished for that. And I paid for that.
The brutality of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon was a news headline until the massacre in the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in 1983, carried out by Christian militia. The slaughter ended the Israeli aspirations of an alliance with the Lebanon under its control, and it ended the career, for a time, of Ariel Sharon. The puzzle of Bosnia became clearer after the carnage at Srebrenica.
Not one single male believed that once he falls into the hands of the Serbs, he could be treated as a POW or whatever. All boys and grown-up men thought that they have to escape from the Serbs.
In 1995, Bosnian Muslim men rounded up by Serbs in an event called cruelly and precisely ethnic cleansing.
Some women tried to tell me that their men were gone and killed by the Serbs. At that time, I didn't know anything and I didn't believe them. So I tried to calm them down. I said, we are here, nothing will happen.
In Vietnam, there were many tipping points as the American people shifted their expectations about the U.S. military from a World War II triumphalism to an understanding that Americans were far from home in Vietnam.
Charges have been made that troops killed as many as 567 South Vietnamese civilians during a sweep in March 1968. A lieutenant has been charged with murder and his staff sergeant with assault with intent to murder.
The My Lai Massacre in 1968, carried out by U.S. troops far from home.
That was just shoot at anything. I don't care what moved. I mean, it's just, you know, the person would come out of a hut, bang, shoot. And it's just complete carnage there that day.
Once the first civilian was killed, it was too late, period. Whoever killed the first civilian, that was the end of the situation. It went out of control.
And then this, right in our backyard.
The day of descent, of course, was focused on Washington, but it was nationwide, both on campus and off campus. Students, politicians, citizens demonstrated against the war. The power of the symbol of Kent State was evident as far away as London, where 5,000 demonstrators broke through police lines protecting the American embassy, while a smaller group marched and chanted Allison, William, Sandy, and Jeffrey, the names of the four Kent State students who were killed by National Guardsmen.
The Kent State shooting in Ohio in May of 1970 changed America's approach to the war in Vietnam.
Gotta get down to it. Soldiers are cutting us down. Should have been done long ago.
The situation in Syria is fluid, and there can be no expectation that it follows any pattern, any script. Certainly, the description of a little boy describing the slaughter of his family in front of his eyes seems a new twist to the carnage. But it is only human will that can actually change things.
Tin soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. Forget in Ohio.
We want to spend the remaining few minutes with Philip Gurevich, author and staff writer for The New Yorker. Philip, how do you evaluate this sort of puzzle in human history? Does it surprise you more that these tipping points happen or that so much carnage can be ignored by the world for so long?
Well, I think what history tells us is that it's not that it's ignored. It's that the presumption that because it outrages us, we can resolve it in a way that's going to satisfy us, both by ending the violence, not entangling us in something worse, not leading to something worse. That's a false presumption. And I think that false presumption or desire, the wish that because we would like to do something good, we know what to do, that often derives from a kind of response that is a humane and moral response. That kind of overwhelms any resort to political judgment. But these crises, these human suffering, the infliction of extreme violence by a state or by a non-state group like this, it's always the consequences of a political situation. These are symptoms. They're not causes. They're symptoms. And I think in that respect, what you're looking at in Syria is a deeply entangled set of political crises, for example, that make it very hard to intervene. It's not that there is no will to help the Syrian people, but when one talks about humanitarian corridors, that means putting boots on the ground to enforce on the ground corridors to very small groups of people in many cases where there's an attack here or a massacre there, there's some displaced people here, in a totally hostile situation where, as David Coyne mentioned, America's first priority is to avert some kind of a war with Iran, which is a sponsor of the Syrian regime, where the Russians have vowed to back the Syrians and not to allow us any kind of action. Where NATO itself, let's be honest, right now NATO has just declared that it is withdrawing from Afghanistan after 12 years there. And we're reading all these reports of schoolgirls being poisoned by the Taliban so that they will shut down schools that educate females. That's an atrocity. And we're actually withdrawing NATO without any of the people who might be calling for an intervention in Syria saying we should stay there. There are limits to what we can do. There's the potential for a tremendous Sunni-Shiite conflagration in that region in Syria with Saudi Arabia, which, by the way, backed the Bahrain state crackdown on Shiite protesters, but now wants to back the Sunni opposition in Syria against the state. There's Turkey, there's Israel in the balance, there's Hezbollah, there are Kurdish rebels mixed into it. You have an enormously complicated situation, and that's what you've seen throughout human history, is where people don't intervene and have never intervened for purely humanitarian reasons, even in Kosovo, even in Libya. Although it gets wrapped in humanitarian arguments, the intervention has other political logic behind it, including the fact that there's the decision that this looks doable, a decision that isn't always right. But I would add that many times the people who are most morally incensed and calling for an intervention are also often the first people to be morally incensed to protest an intervention when it doesn't look like the one they wanted.
The eloquence and wisdom of Philip Gurevich, author and staff writer for The New Yorker. Philip, thanks so much.
Thank you, Joe.
You joined us from New York.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.